So my sermon 2 Sundays ago was an attempt to give an overview of the prophet Micah's summary of what God requires of God's people. He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with our God, with your God. And I think if nothing else comes from what will have been these 4 weeks of spending time together on this passage, at least we will all know that verse. Before moving into today's specific theme, which is the second part, loving kindness, I want us to remember that the Hebrew word translated as require, darash, does not mean insist on or demand, as in you are required to be a U.S. citizen to vote, or you are required to be 21 years old to buy cigarettes in New Mexico or any other state, or as in you are required to save any and all bows from any and all Christmas presents to be used for years and years to come if you are part of my family and wish to remain in the family's good graces. None of those examples capture the intent of the word require in Micah 6:8. Rather, as you've heard me say for a couple of weeks now, in Micah's question, what does the Lord require of you, you who are people of God? The meaning of that version of require is something more like seek, yearn for, need, which to me seems a pretty strong argument for the presence of a relationship rather than a law that requires citizenship in order to vote or to be 21 or older to buy cigarettes. This is more like how a friendship requires trust in order to develop closeness and intimacy. In other words, and I know I'm repeating myself, but I think this is critical for our understanding and our application of this verse. In his use of this word, darash, Micah seems to be revealing to us what it means to be God's people, what it's meant to look like, what that's all about, what is at the heart of our identity as people of God, from God's perspective. And what is at the heart of our identity as people of God is a relationship, a loving relationship between God and us. That is what is at the heart of our identity as people of God. It's a connection based not just on obeying laws. And that's not any of my children. It's a bond that is not dependent on mindlessly obeying rules. It's not a legal contract that hinges on subserviently and heedlessly fulfilling requirements. It's a covenant based on, dependent on, hinging on a loving relationship. And we get to choose whether we will participate in this covenant. God invites us into this relationship, and we get to respond however we want. We can say yes and walk toward the relationship, or we can say no, thank you, and walk away from it. If we say yes, however, and accept God's invitation to enter into this covenant relationship with God, if we say yes and step into this partnership with God, if we say yes and commit to claiming and living into the identity of being people of God, a community of God's people, I think it behooves us to consider, what does God require of us? What does God seek as this relationship develops? What does God yearn for as our identity as God's people is strengthened? What does God need from us, from this relationship, as our partnership with God deepens? And that brings us back to where we started, of course, with Micah's question, what does the Lord require of you? What does the Lord require? What does God require of us? And we all know the answer. Say it with me. To do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. That's what God seeks and longs for and needs from us who claim to be God's people. And I don't know about you, but I would say that's what the world needs too. People who will do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with their God. It may not be what the world thinks it wants, but it seems to me that that's what the world needs. Well, that along with love.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now.
Because as we all know, and I'm not going to belabor this today, but there is so much injustice in the world, so much unkindness, so much walking and running and shouting and sitting and standing unhumbly, if that's a word, which it should be. There's so much of all of that in this world in which we live. In last week's sermon, I talked about doing justice, but with a pretty different take on what that might mean. Different, at least, from what we usually think and talk about when we consider what it means to do justice. I didn't talk about the more common boots on the ground kind of doing justice, things like participating in protests, engaging as community activists, staging letter writing campaigns for important causes, or even educating ourselves about the complexities of today's social issues. And I didn't not talk about those things because they're not important. All of those things are important, and they're critical components of what it means to do justice. But last week I talked about doing justice from a different perspective, a closer to home perspective, you might say, rather than talking about doing justice as something we do out there, out in the world, outside of ourselves. I offered the possibility of considering justice as something we begin to do first by looking in here, inside of ourselves, which I think is even harder, which is why I suspect we gravitate toward doing the other. It's often, if not always, easier to acknowledge and try to address the problems out there than it is to acknowledge and work on addressing the problems in here. Even Jesus acknowledged that phenomenon when he said to his followers, "Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but don't notice the log in your own eye? How can you say to your neighbor, 'Let me take that speck out of your eye,' while the log is in your own eye? You hypocrites, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye." So last week I suggested that perhaps doing justice, doing what is right to and for others, doing what is fair to and for our neighbors, living justly out there, has to start with doing justice in here. I suggested that it has to start with being just in here, that before we can possibly work on creating true communities of caring, where all lives matter to God, matter as much to one another as they do to God, perhaps we each need to work on building a deep foundation of caring within ourselves, for ourselves, doing the hard work of first acknowledging and then the even harder work of accepting all the parts of ourselves, the presentable and the messy parts, the desirable and the undesirable parts, the comfortable and the uncomfortable parts. And then perhaps hardest of all, coming to firmly and deeply believe that with all of that, we are relentlessly and unconditionally loved by God. I think it is then and only then that we will be able to make progress on truly building just communities where all lives matter to one another as much as they do to God. So how do we do that? How are we able to see the parts of ourselves that we don't want to see? What is it that allows us to acknowledge those parts, and not only acknowledge them, but begin to accept them and even make peace with them, so that we might somehow deeply and truly know ourselves as God's beloved? I think a key factor is kindness. Kindness toward ourselves. But we're going to start with a brief look at what kindness is in general and what it isn't. Being kind is not the same as being nice or sweet or polite. It does not mean offering superficial flattery or empty praise. It does not mean ignoring what's messy or tolerating what's destructive. Being kind means being authentic. Being kind means genuinely caring. Being kind means interacting with deep curiosity. Practicing true kindness decreases the desire to judge and condemn and berate, and increases the desire to know more, to learn more, to understand more. Kindness creates space for vulnerability. It creates space for honesty and risk-taking. Kindness holds space for mistakes. It holds space for pain and fear. It holds space for shame and guilt. And it does all of that with compassion. Experiencing kindness reduces our fear of being known, deepens our willingness to be seen, and expands our capacity to hear and see and know what is true. I'm going to read a quote from a book called Love Kindness, which is written by Barry Corey, who's a university president. Kindness is not a virtue limited to grandmothers or Boy Scouts. We devalue its power when we think of kindness as pampering or random acts. Kindness doesn't pamper, and it's not random. It's radical. It's brave and daring, fearless and courageous, and at times kindness is dangerous. It has more power to change people than we can imagine. It can break down seemingly impenetrable walls. It can empower leaders and break stalemates. It can reconcile relationships long thought irreparable. It can reconcile nations. Kindness, as Jesus lived it, has the power to move mountains. Don't we need that in our world today? But before we can move those mountains of injustice and brokenness in our world, before we can do the work of creating communities of caring where all lives matter to each other as much as they do to God, before we get too busy doing justice out there, I believe we need to do the work of justice in here. We need to do the work of creating a foundation of caring within ourselves, for ourselves, by first acknowledging and then accepting all of the parts of ourselves so that we can come to truly believe that we are indeed a beloved child of God. And we do that beginning with kindness, by being deeply and relentlessly kind to ourselves so that we might find the courage to get to know our true and full selves with curiosity and vulnerability, with a longing to learn and understand rather than judge and condemn, When we can be courageously kind to ourselves, we can allow space for our mistakes. We can hold space for our pain. We can give space to our shame with compassion and tenderness. And we can lose our fear of being known and deepen our willingness to be seen and expand our capacity to know ourselves as deeply and unconditionally and endlessly loved by God. And when we can do all of that for ourselves, doing justice and loving kindness in here, then we can begin to truly and authentically do it for others. We can begin to do justice and love kindness out there. God and the world and our true selves are waiting. Let's get started. Amen.